as you know, that the Libyan capital, Tripoli, turned into a battlefield of a street warfare ensued between the two of the most powerful armed factions in the country. Where do you see this conflict going?
Well, it's difficult to know because it's obviously expanding at a very rapid rate. It's already moved into the south of Tripoli. It's moved into some of the most densely densely populated parts of the capital. But I think the intriguing element is that this has the capacity to move into the traditional logistics holds of larger capital conflicts. So the conflict that took place on April 4th, 2019, when Khalifa Haftar launched the power grab on the capital, took place in areas that are typically associated now with the 3-4 Brigade. So Shuedif, Farhuna, Bani Walid, these areas are areas that are pivotal to the bigger campaigns, the campaigns that decide the future of the capital. And I think that's why it's curious that the fighting is spreading towards these areas. And there is also the possibility that I think in previous history that unfortunately these kind of conflicts are solved over the phone when political leaders get together, militia leaders get together, and ambassadors have to make phone calls and apply pressure. That's when these things start to de-escalate. But, you know, it obviously has the fuel to continue to go much further. And again, you know, the most densely part of the country, or the most densely populated part of the country is now facing the kind of street battles that we associate with civilian deaths, civilian casualties, and internal displacement. So it's a very sad episode in the capital.
While the international community is condemning the violence in Tripoli, we have not seen or heard any statements by the government, leaving everyone is basically wondering as what really has happened. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think there has been some statements by the head of the Presidential Council, Mohamed El-Menfi. There have been talks that were held in a suburb of Tripoli, Souk El-Jamaa, with elders of that community in the last few hours between Kbeiba and his capacity, obviously, as the Prime Minister of the Ministry of Defense, but also with Ahmed Trabelsi, the Ministry of Interior. I think that this has something to do with the broader talks that are going on about a unity government, the joint military council's work, the 5+5 talks that are supposed to unify the rival factions across the country. But I think they're also trying to calibrate the security architecture of the capital.
I want to go back to the incident itself. So do you think, okay, can it be asserted that the Special Deterrence Force independently took action to apprehend Mahmoud Hamza without some sort of a judicial order from the Interior Ministry?
Well, that's what it seems like on paper. I mean, in fact, the irony being is that's what it seems like in the absence of paper. Unless that judicial order is made public, unless the Attorney General's office obviously intervenes and puts out a public statement to authorize and legitimize that move, then it just seems like run-of-the-mill armed groups and militias fighting one another. And that's going to weaken the confidence of people that are living in Tripoli, because this is supposed to be armed groups now that are becoming more professionalized, or that are working underneath a more sturdier system, a system that at the very least now has less armed groups than it did only 2 years ago after the fighting that took place in 2019. So I think it's important to remember that and remind ourselves that there is a number of reasons that this could have happened. And I think number one, as you've rightly mentioned, there is no legal or legitimate political basis for them to do this, but there is politics behind the scenes here, and there's a lot of politicking that has been going on quietly between armed groups and between rival political factions in order to create a unity government between Khalifa Haftar on the one hand and Abdel Hamid Dbeibah on the other. And those things are deeply destabilizing when it becomes a kind of almost like a piece of cake that is being distributed amongst different armed groups. And that is the case when it comes to Khalifa Haftar's factions, certainly the case when it comes to Abdel Hamid Dbeibah's factions. None of them are acting like the subservient, neutral forces that Libya has come to expect, or Libyans, irrespective of their background, east, west, and south, have come to expect. This is the unfortunate reality of where Libya is, and it requires the international community to uphold its responsibility when working on the 5+5, to maintain neutrality, to try to maintain an objective that allows for these armed groups to transition into a neutral political force, not a political force that is there to work with one particular unity government or a rival unity government or an elite bargain. Because the last time we saw this episode, it was when the rival parallel administration, the government of national stability, was established. We saw the very same violence in May of last year. And it's the very same kind of episodes of violence that Tripoli, unfortunately, has come accustomed to. You know, run-of-the-mill politics, run-of-the-mill militia politics, and you know, slicing up the cake. It's very, very unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. I want to end this interview with probably a very obvious question that has been asked by so many. Militias are probably one of the most chronic issues Libya has been suffering from since the toppling of the former regime. What is it exactly that makes it extremely difficult to integrate all these factions into one entity, especially in the western part of the country?
I think it's a great question. I think, you know, it's probably a better question for a sociologist than a political analyst, but the best way to characterize this is to actually ask many of these armed groups themselves. I think we have two different things that we're discussing. We have armed groups and militias that have plagued the country over the last over a decade now, for the last 12 years. We also have the phenomena of armed groups, the so-called Thawar, and people that establish themselves and take up arms during conflict. And we've seen that in three different waves: 2011, 2014, and 2019. They outnumber the number of armed groups threefold, fourfold at the very least. And I think that's the main problem. When you speak to a lot of these armed groups, they don't see themselves as militias, especially not those that are rank and file, that are fighting, you know, for a measly summary of a couple of $100 a month. These guys see themselves as civilians that stand for something politically. And unless we respond to, you know, the dividing core issues that many that stood for in Eastern Libya or stood for in Western Libya over the last decade, we're not going to find consensus. I think when we look at the makeup of a lot of these groups, some of them are definitely criminally orientated, and that's not something that is a surprise for many. If anyone reads the UN panel of expert reports, you can see the criminality of armed groups in the East, you can see the criminality of armed groups in the West and in the South. The difficulty here is when you deal with individuals and groups who believe that they stand for something politically, and they have a fear of a return to military rule, or they have a fear of militia rule. And I think the only way to be able to establish that is through structures, not through political deals and bargaining and personalities, but through structures that at the very least give a sense of trust, a sense of confidence, and a sense of you know, an absence of that kind of day-to-day fear for all of those groups concerned. And I mean, on a technical level, I think we have to break apart all of the tribal, city-state, you know, neighborhood elements that have bound these groups together. When you look at armies across the world, they don't come from one state in the US, they don't come from one part of the country in the UK or in Europe. They come from across the country. And when you look at the armed groups that are fighting, they come from neighborhoods, they come from different tribes. And I think that's something that has already plagued the country, and it will plague the country moving forward. And they also, and finally, they can't be subservient to an individual. They can't be allied to, you know, Khalifa Haftar or to Abdel Hamid Dbeibah. They should be allied to the state of Libya. And that is going to be a difficult task if they continue to be made up of these different kind of armed groups that transition in name. One minute they're given three numbers, the next minute they're given a different name. They need to be, it's not about the names and the uniforms, it's about the doctrine, it's about the makeup and the structures of those armed groups. Unless we tackle the most uncomfortable questions and the most obvious questions, we're not going to make any steps forward.